Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. My name is Aiden Driscoll, and Liv is not here today. My first solo host of the show. I'm going to talk with my brother today about Star Wars. Liv was going to join us, but she decided she'd rather do just about anything else. So Taliesin and I are going to take the reins and talk about Star Wars for a while. If you're not into Star Wars, give us a shot. We might convince you otherwise. Sit back and enjoy this week's episode of
Between Takes.
Both rolling. Okay, hold your mic here. It's right next to mine. All right, that should work. Hopefully.
Otherwise, we're
this is gonna be just a conversation we have by ourselves, yeah. And then I call you up in a week or two and say, "Hey, never mind,
it didn't work.
Didn't work.
Can we either try again or
you just want to send me the clip note version of it and I can I can re-record it.
Either that or it'll just be like just sound like we're not at all talking to each other. Like it'll have one person's
audio.
That'll
be like a really weird delay.
Yeah, person's audio.
Yeah. We're recording on our iPhones today because I flew home for the week, and I didn't bring any of my recording stuff because I didn't want to get all that on the plane. So we're just recording on an iPhone. The quality may be a little different, and we're also at home, and there may be a person or two wandering in and out. Big Mama, hello? We are, yes. Mama just walked by. Copernicus is chilling in the corner right now. And there's that. So just want to let you know, apologies for the potential quality, but I think it'll turn out okay. Anyway, we're moving on. Well, welcome back to season 3. I think this will be the second episode of season 3 as of now.
Wow.
Because I think me and Liv will record, we're recording this April 15th, 2022.
Wow.
And this will probably be coming out the first Saturday of May, which actually works out well because May the 4th, I think, is on like a Wednesday or something.
And oh, yeah.
Only a few days later. Which is Star Wars Day. And
oh, yeah.
So this will come out Star Wars week, kind of. I don't know.
By the way, 3 weeks later will be the 45th anniversary of Star Wars.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So this is good timing.
Yeah.
This is a good time for us to do this.
Yeah.
We've only been... Well, never mind. Well, let's give a quick... Well, first off, folks, welcome Leland Aubrey to the show. Do you want me to introduce you as Taliesin or Chuck or...
Maybe Leland? It'll be one of those things where, like, they have... I have hundreds of names, and they'll never know which one's my real one.
That sounds good. Kind of like something that's kind of similar to that.
Yeah, like that one thing. Yeah.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is Leland Aubrey, the Fubster, Big Chief Sitting Fub, Leland Aubrey, Chuck.
Mr. Charles.
Mr. Charles, no relation. yeah, I think that's about it. There's probably some more here and there.
Yeah.
Leo. We've called you Leo every so often. Samwise, according
Mom
to
Mom would call
Papa.
Me either Liam or Leland for a little bit. Yeah.
Anyway, he's here, my littlest brother.
I am.
And we are going to talk about stuff. We, nerd alert, first off. Nerd alert, but also nerds where their parents are also English teachers. So we didn't learn it in terms of nerdy language. We learned it in terms of Northrop Frye and Jordan Peterson and... C.S. Lewis.
That just makes us sound even dorkier.
Well, I think it makes us sound more pretentious.
Oh, okay.
So I think that's the line.
We're not just nerdy kids. We're also theater nerdy
right.
kids.
Right. Like you and I would never dream of going to Comic-Con, right?
Oh, never.
Sure. But like we'd go listen to Jordan Peterson speak or
for sure.
You know, those kinds of things.
Oh, 100%.
So, we're going to be talking about Star Wars. We're going to be talking about all 9 of the theatrical releases of the Star Wars saga. And just kind of break them down movie by movie, say the things we like, say the things we don't like. People who like Star Wars, I think, will enjoy this because we will probably be saying a lot of things that people already know or are slightly unique takes on pre-existing opinions. And if you don't like Star Wars, I do not know if you all like this. So... Well, give it a shot.
Yeah.
I want to say that. Give it a shot because I do think we're not just going to be talking about nerdy, like, oh, they have an explosion. That was cool.
Yeah. I genuinely find it hard to believe that there are people who hate Star Wars. I understand there are people who don't love it and, like, who, you know, don't have the same feelings, nostalgia towards it as, like, you and I do. But, like, people who genuinely have watched the, at the very least, Star Wars, A New Hope, the one that came out in 1977... have looked at that and been like, oh yeah, no, this is garbage.
Yeah.
I find that hard to... I'm sure there are those people.
Honestly...
But I have a feeling it's more towards just them reacting to how popular it became.
And we're not saying that those people who do hate Star Wars are like idiots or anything like that. Yeah. It is just something that I think we grew up with and so instantly loved that it's the same reason that we you know, people who don't grow up with Robert McCloskey.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, it was such a staple in my childhood. Yeah. I don't understand why it's not a staple in your childhood. So yeah, we're going to talk about Star Wars. We're going to go in chronological order within the timeline of Star Wars.
Yeah.
So there were the original trilogy released in 77 through 83, those three movies. And then there was 1999 through 2005 was a prequel trilogy which took place before those three. And then 2015 to 2019 was a sequel trilogy which took place after the original three.
Wow, you
so
like
we're kind
that,
of jumping
right?
around a little bit.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's Star Wars talk pretty much exclusively, so give it a shot. But if you have not seen Star Wars, I would recommend watching them. I think they're really good movies. I understand there's nine of them. Watch the original three at the very least.
At the very least. Because it's just a fun thing. That one, I feel like the prequel trilogy, you can watch it and enjoy it, but it's not going to be the same because the first three, the original trilogy, is almost like just the classical classical story. It's just the one we've seen a thousand times just now in space.
And then the prequels start to play with more complexity within this world and these characters and all that.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but it doesn't hit if you don't know the original trilogy in a way.
It's not
and
gonna,
even we'll get into that.
Yeah.
Even so I think a lot of it doesn't hit. So let's just jump into it. Let's talk about The Phantom Menace. That was a release in 1999. It is the story about the Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn finding Anakin Skywalker on the desert planet of Tatooine, believing him to be the chosen one who is going to restore balance to the Force right after they've discovered that the Sith, the dark side users of the Force, have returned to destroy the Jedi and the Galactic Republic. Thoughts? Go.
Well, first of all, you forgot the part that a lot of Star Wars fans love to point out. The politics, which is in the title scroll, they talk about the Federation, I believe, has started taxing. Is it just the Republic in general, or just
specifically Naboo?
Okay, starts taxing Naboo more, and they're not cool with that. And so then they send ambassadors, two Jedi ambassadors, to go through with it, those ambassadors, of course, being Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon and stuff like that.
Okay. As we will talk as we go, anything in the prequels, if virtually every single complaint people have for the prequels, I have a follow-up and say yes, but Clone Wars came in and redeemed that.
Yeah.
And politics is one of them. And there is, like, in within extended canon lore, there was like a century of history leading up to this.
Yeah.
And I think like, A, why not make this what the story is about?
Mm-hmm.
Or B, don't talk about it so much. I think those are your options. Either expand on it and make it worth your time, or don't even bring it up.
But also I would say the politics alone didn't make the prequels not work. I think the politics, you know, it's not like you put politics in something in Star Wars, boom, it's bad.
Right.
Because I think, if anything, that can help expand it. Because that was a lot of people's complaint with, I mean, I know we're skipping ahead, but a little bit, and I'll just quickly jump back. The sequel trilogy, people had a problem with it because it didn't explain certain things. Because
it was just kind of assumed.
Yeah,
First Order, and then there are these resistance.
Yeah, these things rose to power. We have no explanation. Anyway, going back to Phantom Menace, since that's where we're still at, I think that the politics can help expand the universe and help you understand. And I think especially when the fact that they're defining what the Galactic Republic is and making sure that you know you subtly realize how much power this thing actually has can really help you to understand how the Galactic Empire rose to power.
Right. So I think that the politics, so here's something I've learned, and I think I brought this up to you pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I really like about the prequels, there are many things about the prequels that I think are really, really cool concepts that I think should be explored within the world of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I like about the prequel trilogy are the very high-resolution concepts.
Yeah.
The idea of, what is this galactic, you know, government system? Mm-hmm. How does that work? That's interesting to me. I would like to see what is this economic system and how does that affect the average person? And then how does that, how does the Jedi Order, how does the Jedi Order fall within that? And then, especially then with then the Sith rising up, and which even there, we'll talk about that as we go. It's not really assumed for a while that the Sith are even part of the main bad guys within the trilogy.
I think it's Ki-Adi Mundi who says that when Qui-Gon suspects that Darth Maul might be a Sith, he says the Sith have been extinct for well over a millennium, I think, which
it's 1,000 years.
Yeah, okay. So that's quite some time. That's
right.
Either way, that's a long right. gap.
Well, and that's, I mean, true that I just wish, I don't know. We'll talk about it as we go. Where were we? So, the things I really like are the very, like what Jordan Peterson refers to as the high resolution and the low resolution. Mm-hmm. The high resolution is the very, very specific, those are the stories that are very about their character driven and about a specific hero's journey and their arc, as opposed to low resolution stories, which are much more about analyzing the archetypes of these stories and these, excuse me, and these characters.
Which is, continue.
Well, so I would say like, what's an example? Pinocchio is a very high resolution story. It's about this little boy who's a puppet who wants to become a real boy. Tangled is a high resolution story. It's about this girl who wants to go out into the world and see the floating lights and have these adventures. Rango, I think, is a low resolution story. It's about the archetype of the hero. It's about the archetype of the comedy. And within that are specific high resolution characters and moments, but the majority of the characters are there to fill a role.
And that's part of the point of the film, is that the one of the first questions that Rango asks is, who am I? I can be anyone. And then he goes through the different heroes, like, the pirate of a ship, a traveler going through the jungles, those kind of things.
And that, so I think it's stories are well done when they know what kind of story they are and how to utilize those tools to their advantage.
Yeah.
I think Star Wars has a lot of really cool low-resolution concepts about Force and the Jedi Order and the government and politics within that. But the actual high-resolution, how it actually turned out, I think, is where it's very lacking. The actual dialogue and the character development. I mean, I think as we'll go, we'll figure it out. Let's move into Attack of the Clones. Attack of the Clones is the second one. That was 2002? 2002.
Okay.
I don't think there needed to be 10 years between the Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. Not within the releases, within the world.
Yeah.
There are 10 years between the Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. And I don't think they needed to be that way.
Yeah.
I think Anakin, because Anakin's like 8 years old in the first movie or something, and now 10 years later he's supposed to be like 18.
But he's still acting like he's 16, so you might as well just kept it at.
So it's kind of like just either, make him, keep him young for the entire trilogy, or like when they find him, make him already be I think it would have been cool if he were more of an Anakin or a Luke later on, you know, a teenager who was already had this maturity level and this instinct of how to make his way through the world.
And
that would have made more sense rather than, I mean, it literally is just Qui-Gon is like, got a feeling about this kid, and that's it. And it's like, if you didn't happen to meet this kid, how did they initially meet?
They met him because they went to Watto's shop, and they needed the parts, and then they run into Anakin, and then a sandstorm comes in, and Anakin brings
him to his family. If the sandstorm had not come,
the entire trilogy,
Qui-Gon would have had no reason to suspect. He literally just was like, what's going on? What's going on? Bye-bye. And that's it. Walks out.
Yeah.
And I think, I want you to have a reason, not just, you know, because, I mean, then they have, like, that dinner and all that during the sandstorm, and Qui-Gon is like, wow, you're asking a lot of questions. You know about, like, the Jedi Order and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, the Jedi Order isn't, like, the secretive thing, is it? Like,
it's have an entire giant building on Korra.
It's not necessarily something that everyone in the Outer Rim is, like, involved with, but it's not this mystery at this point.
And
that's the only reason Qui-Gon's like, this is interesting. This is intriguing. It would have been way more intriguing if they would have met, and Anakin already has a very established character and a very established set of skills and was already a great pilot and had all these things that you see him grow later on, and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan go, wow, this is really interesting.
Yeah.
As soon as they meet him, they know something's up with this guy. Yeah, so Attack of the Clones, where are we? Thoughts on Attack of the Clones. I think the best thing this movie has going for it is, again, the low-resolution concepts and ideas of spending a lot of time on Coruscant with the Galactic Senate and figuring out like what are the ramifications of a potential war, and all these sketchy things rising up over on the corners, and then finally realizing, oh, there is actually a full-on army that is attacking us, that is declaring war on us, and then the clone army coming in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that I think are really cool that make sense and work, but it's like virtually every plot point happens, and I'm like, that's really the best way you could figure out to make this play out?
They noticed that there was a clone army being created that they weren't aware about.
They didn't notice that. He went there. He went to Kamino, Obi-Wan with Kamino, to be like, hey, did you sell some bounty hunter these weapons? And they were like, glad to see you. We have a clone army for you. And I mean, just like, Obi-Wan is just so casual about it. He just does not react.
He doesn't even need to prove that he's a Jedi. My favorite part is like literally any bubbly idiot could have flown on there and they would have assumed that he was a Jedi.
Some guy with a robe and a hood could have just waltzed on by and they're like, here you go. Thanks a lot.
Jar Jar Binks could have been in charge of the clone army.
Oh, gracious.
That would have been awesome.
I just think like there are better ways to do this. Yeah. Again, having a clone army, really cool. Yeah. I think this is awesome. Having Obi-Wan track down Jango Fett, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it happened, I look at now and go, that's it? That's the best you came up with?
And again, I just can't go back to the one video of How It Should Have Ended, which is, if you don't know, is a YouTube channel where they just make funny little animated videos of like, you know, a movie, this is how it should have ended.
What's more like logical conclusion.
And one of the points they bring up is what happens if he had captured Jango Fett? His ship only had one seat, and are they just gonna borrow Jango's ship? Or is he gonna sit on his lap the whole time?
That's funny.
Especially because he has a kid now.
Well,
he
has that little like spare parts compartment, so maybe he would have just like had Jango like curl up back there. That's funny.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
But it's
kind of funny. And it's like, are they... I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah.
Because then this movie ends, and this is then where the Clone Wars, the animated series, takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, you see a lot of what is lacking in Attack of the Clones, which is the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and the relationship between Anakin and Padme, and then adding in a bunch of new characters, which I think are just as good as the best characters.
Yeah.
I think Ahsoka and Rex and Cody and pretty much everyone in the Bad Batch.
Cad Bane.
They rival. I mean, they're right up there, I think, with Han Solo and Darth Vader and Princess Leia. They are so well conceived, and their motivation and internal logic is so consistent with itself.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it going with
and
this?
Then it also makes you like Anakin.
Right.
Like, it makes him... It does such a good job at, like... It doesn't just make him go a full hero's arc, because then that makes you wonder, okay, how does this guy turn to the dark side? But it also doesn't go a full, he's a jerk, he never follows the rules, because then that makes you question, why does the Jedi Order keep him around?
Okay, so let's now go into Revenge of the Sith, because here's, I think, one of the big flaws with the trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why it would have worked better had Anakin already had it, like, been older in The Phantom Menace, had it been Hayden Christensen for all three, even though I think he's not the best actor.
Yeah.
A lot of it is dependent on the script. I think it would have been better if it were that way, because in Phantom Menace, he kind of doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does plot things, and he's there.
Yeah.
But you don't really see his character grow because he's gone in the next movie.
Yeah.
And then he's, you know, the character's there, but it's a brand new actor, and now he's this, like, whiny, immature, brash, hot-headed kid who's trying to prove himself. And then in Revenge of the Sith, for, like, 20 minutes, we see him and Obi-Wan actually like working together and having a relationship. But then after that, spoiler alert, also spoiler alert for all this, I probably should have said that earlier, but you probably assumed, or at least don't care. After that, he immediately becomes evil.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you would have set up the whininess in the first movie, and then in the second movie, really established and honed in on the relationship between him and Obi-Wan, and seeing him being an amazing Jedi and being a noble leader and all these things, it would have made his fall significantly more impactful and tragic. But they spent like 20 minutes at the beginning of the third movie to establish that, and then switch it over, and now he's evil and selfish and all these things.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, one of the biggest overarching flaws of the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Is just that. Is the And I think one of the main thing that the Clone Wars fixed was that relationship and made that worth investing
in. But it also, like I said, still gave him plenty of flaws. It made him very... He still would lose his temper very quickly. Right. He still could be very irrational. And he went against the Jedi Order sometimes, but it proved to work out. And kind of, it's more like Obi-Wan and all the other Jedis have kind of accepted that this is just who he is.
Right.
And have seen it, that it works out most of the time.
And you see him actually care for Obi-Wan and realize, you know, in certain instances, in certain episodes, his top priority is protecting Obi-Wan and the people around him. And you see him actually leading the troops, and the troops respect him, and they want to do what he does because they trust him. They see him as someone who has good plans, who prioritizes their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think we kind of keep bringing that up. And in a way, I mean, I think it is still canon, right? The Clone Wars?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Because, I mean, I see that as like a very, very significant part of the prequel trilogy is the fact that we have seven seasons of the Clone Wars, which are, for the majority of it, so good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some lesser good ones. And there are some that are... not quite bad, but all just kind of like, eh.
Why did this need to exist?
Yeah, it's like, it didn't have to be here. It doesn't really further anything along.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't take away anything, which is...
That's true.
It's still nice.
But it's like season seven, where it actually parallels to Revenge of the Sith, makes Revenge of the Sith so much more impactful.
Yeah, and also going back to what you said about the high resolution and low resolution, I think... The final battle between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and then on the other side, Yoda and Palpatine, on very low resolution, that's really cool.
Right.
The concept of the master fighting the apprentice, they used to be brothers, they used to really trust each other, and now they're trying to kill each other. And meanwhile, we have Yoda and Palpatine, the master of good and the master of evil, fighting each other. And then especially when Palpatine starts throwing the little Senate chairs at Yoda, kind of symbolizing the democracy falling and stuff like that.
There's a lot of low resolution ideas that I think are cool, that work.
It's just,
that had been executed better, it would have been really impactful. They wouldn't even have to change that much during the climax itself, but just the setup of it doesn't make those moments leave that huge of an impact.
The fact that the fight itself between Anakin and Obi-Wan is cool, it's just the fact that the lines are... I will do what I must, and then Anakin replying, "You will try. Don't make me destroy you."
He says the same basically the same line like four times over the course of 15 minutes. We've mainly been talking about the flaws, but it has a definite beginning, middle, and end to the entire trilogy. Not just within the movie, to each trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing is off at times. I think Attack of the Clones could be 15 minutes shorter.
Oh, yeah.
I think it drags on once this... battle starts on Geonosis, it's going on for a while.
Yeah.
But I think it is entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the very least they're fun. At the very least, it is fun action and cool concepts and interesting set pieces that have their flaws. And once you look at it, I mean, I think every movie has its flaws. But
I think Revenge of the Sith, most of the things that I have to critique about it is either the pacing or the dialogue.
Right.
Whereas, like, with Phantom Menace or Attack of the Clones, where you can actually... it doesn't matter if the dialogue is fixed. There's still those plot holes and still those weird things and stuff. So that's... I think Revenge of the Sith... also, again, it's cool just because it's the one where he actually turns to Darth Vader and he goes dark and all that stuff.
Right.
But I think, overall, it's very entertaining... at the very least. Like, even when you're watching it, there are very few... there are moments, but I think the moments are rare where you're, like, angry at it. For the most part, it's just oh, that's kind of annoying, or, oh, that's slightly weird. Like, Phantom Menace, when Jar Jar is in it, I'm more just like, okay, he's just annoying. He didn't have to be here, but, like, I'm not actively angry. It's more just when you think about it after you've watched it where those flaws can come to be.
Yeah. So there's that. Those are the prequels.
Yeah.
They are what they are.
Yeah.
And I think that they are... the new things they bring to Star Wars, and I think to movies in general, I think are done really well, are cool. the things that have been done 1,000 times in movies, I think is where they're really lacking.
Because
I think, you know, building a romantic relationship between the two characters who we have no reason to believe that they're in love. We're just told that they're in love, and they have some dialogue that alludes to that, kinda.
Yeah.
And then they kiss sometimes. Therefore, they're in love, and we should feel for them, mm-hmm. you know, and understand the stakes of this relationship. So, yeah, let's move on to A New Hope. Yeah. Let's get into the good stuff. 1977, the one that started it all. Your thoughts, Chuck?
Well, it's very hard to talk about it because I feel like anything I say has already been said 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's the most, it's just your classic story. Guy has to save a princess, meets an old mentor, meets a couple of of misfits, mm-hmm. and he saves him from an evil warlock, and... But then it still adds little things like she's maybe the princess and needs to be saved initially, but she still, she can fend for herself and stuff like that.
But then she's also like one of the most significant leaders of the rebellion.
Mm-hmm. But also I think there's like an interesting conundrum where like the fact that it's such a classical story that we've seen 1,000 times and it's introducing us to this new world that we've never seen before, but mm-hmm. it's using a story we've seen 1,000 times, kind of helps us know what this universe is. And so I feel, it seems like, despite being working as a standalone film, because no one knew that it was going to be successful, it seemed like it was purposefully building up to make sequels and continue to expand the universe and stuff like that.
Hmm.
But I don't think it would have had the chance to expand the universe had it not started with this basic story.
I think had it not played out, I think even if at the very end of A New Hope there was something teasing Empire Strikes Back, it would have been a weaker movie overall.
Yeah, it would have been less successful. And
but I think because it was such a good self-contained story that worked so well on its own and people went back to it over and over,
mm-hmm.
it made I would imagine the people who loved the original when they announced the sequel went like, oh, cool, more of the thing I love.
Yeah.
More of these characters I love.
Yeah.
And then especially once you got to it, and we can go into this now, once you got to Empire Strikes Back, that is something that... You know, I've gone and watched some of like the behind the scenes interviews of the actors on set and all that, talking about it, and something so many of them say was like, this isn't just a sequel like we've seen before. This is like, this is furthering the story.
This is
creating new sides of these characters that you already know.
Almost like a new, whole, entirely different universe. Like, had you not already seen these characters and like without, you know, it still keeps a lot of the feeling and technology and stuff, mm-hmm. but overall, like, the story and the mood and everything is just completely different. And
it doesn't rehash, like, anything from the original.
Nah. And I think the closest it gets is just the title crawl, which kind of, that's the whole point of the title crawl, is it just quickly rehashes all the past events and where you are now.
Past events, just what happened immediately leading up to this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it really is, like, immediately leading up to this movie. So it's like, you can watch it, and 10 minutes in, you know...
Yeah.
Okay, I know what's going on. I understand the stakes of the story.
And then also I think that's one of the reasons why they did things like having Luke be attacked right away by the... What's that Yeti?
Wampa.
And like all these different things too. And then also put it on an ice world to almost instantly suggest like this is going to be slightly darker. We're not going to... you don't want to foreshadow right away that this is going to end as a tragedy.
Right.
But, like, it's going to make it clear this is a different story.
The stakes
story.
Have been raised with this story. And then you see, and then it cuts to Darth Vader for the first time, and you see his Star Destroyer is, like, mm-hmm. 3 times as big as it was in the last movie.
And then
movie.
That's the first time we hear the Imperial March.
Right.
So now
and
it
starts
it has...
with this menacing shot of just the back of his head.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, the stakes have been raised.
Yeah.
And it's this giant Imperial army going in to invade this rebel base,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like I think pretty much every scene in the first 30 minutes of that movie are just raising the stakes higher and higher and higher and higher, and it just doesn't stop. This is a movie where I think the pacing is just about perfect. I think both the first two, A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, are paced brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
Where A New Hope takes, you know, it's in space, so the time passing is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah,
but it probably takes place over the course of 3-4 days or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think it is just so well done. It is so tight. Whereas, you know, Attack of the Clones could take place over the course of, like, 4 months.
Yeah.
Potentially, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think Empire Strikes Back, just everything with Han and Leia on the Falcon, flying through the asteroid field and all that,
mm-hmm.
is so well done and so intense and interesting and all the things.
And again, it's said a thousand times, but the chemistry between Han and Leia is just so... That first, the kind of the, where they actually kind of can low-key confess their feelings, as in, like, when they kiss for the first time, it the shot, the scenery, the lighting, the way it zooms up on Carrie, the music, the way the little lights lightly peek through.
It's and like, so, like, it's so ugly in a way.
Yeah.
It's so, like, they're just in this weird maintenance corner, like, where they're trying to fix the ship. And, like, I don't know. It's just so well done. And, and you, like, you see it coming, and it's not, like, this crazy, like, yes, this is what it's all been about moment.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a, this is the only time in this movie we've, like, breathed.
Yeah.
Like, had a time to go, like, oh, wow, these are people. And then you remember, like, oh, that's right. They're also being chased by, you know. Anyway. And it makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It just makes sense. It's so well done.
And then on the other side, we have Luke crashing on Dagobah, which is also welly done.
Right. It is welly done indeed.
Yeah, I think, what would your favorite part about that whole, the part of Luke and training with Yoda and that whole thing? What's your favorite part of it?
Just anything on Dagobah?
Yeah, like your favorite scene, favorite line, favorite vibe.
I think the first scene with Luke and Yoda in the cabin before he knows he's Yoda.
Yeah.
And then as he finds out he's Yoda and as Obi-Wan's voice comes in and is talking, and you're not quite sure, is he talking to both of them? Because I feel like Luke notices something, but he doesn't necessarily hear the exact words of Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
But it's just this really cool three generations of Jedi talking to each other, trying to, like, figure out what to do. And I think it's done well. And I think it's something in subsequent movies, they've tried doing things kind of like that. And I think they just kind of always fallen a little bit flat. I think this is the scene where it is done the best and most uniquely. And I don't exactly know why. Pernie's shaking again.
I think it's the fact that when they first start, Yoda is being silly and goofy. Oh. And I just love the idea that, you know, it's been 20-something years since the last time he's ever seen someone.
Oh, we don't know for sure. Oh, but, yeah.
But, and then someone come, the first time someone comes along who he believes, who I assume the ghost of Obi-Wan told him will be someone to help bring down the Empire. And the first thing he does is decide to start messing with him.
Yeah.
And I just love
it. And just test him. Yeah. Like, so what's your patience level? Yeah. Let's see where this is going.
But then also after that, it's not like he's overly cynical of, like, no, I just can't train just because, ooh, I'm old and grumpy. It's more just like a, when you, it seems like that when you first watch it, but then after you watch it and have the plot twist, then it's like, oh, that actually makes perfect sense. Yeah, of course he's going to think Luke is, he's going to be skeptical, because last time he did this with a Skywalker,
and he thinks,
didn't end so well.
Right, and if I just leave it here, the Empire will just die out, and at least Luke can survive in some way. But he's like, but if we make him more powerful, power will invite challenge, like Vision says in the Civil War.
Right? Yeah. There's so many good, like, just lines. One of my favorites is,
I know.
That is a great one.
That's a classic.
But then also, when it cuts to, one of the, one of the Star Destroyers, and one of the admirals who said he was going to go up and apologize to Vader about losing Falcon, is just choked to death, and he's on the floor.
He just, like, falls
on. And then Vader just walks by and says, apology accepted, admiral.
He just, it's, again, just raises the stakes, and it's still, like, silly in a way. It still has a very, like, campy lightheartedness, but in such a unique way where it also the stakes are high and these are menacing forces.
Him choking his own officers and then kind of saying something somewhat funny both lightens the mood, but only to bring it two notches darker just because of showing how ruthless he is and how he does not care about them. He does not care about their lives. He cares about results.
Yeah. And it's very well done.
Also, I don't trust Lando. I don't trust
him either.
He is my friend after all.
That's a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Empire Strikes Back. Ends in tragedy. Luke gets his hand cut off. Luke finds out Darth Vader's his father. Han is frozen in carbonite. Gets sent off to Jabba. They all leave barely with their lives. It's a sad day. Sad day for the Rebellion.
Yeah.
But then in Return of the Jedi, I think, is the weakest of the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think where the story goes and how it concludes is exactly the right way for the overarching story of the trilogy to go and conclude.
Yeah.
I don't think people have, I just recently found out, people have a lot of complaints of basically everything that goes on Endor is boring and like filler. And it's not the best. It's definitely a lot sillier than anything we've seen thus far, especially for like the third movie, you know, for this huge, you know, high stakes finale. Yeah. It is pretty silly in a lot of ways, but I don't think it's pointless filler.
Yeah.
I don't think it's there just because they couldn't think of anything else. I think it makes sense for them to do that.
There's still the scene between Luke and Leia where he tells her the truth, and then there's still the scene then that follows of Han and Leia where you get this nice moment of Han opening up and like saying he's sorry to her, and then her willing to be more vulnerable, and then it's still technically on Endor when Luke confronts Vader and they have their discussion and
Vader has no expression.
Yeah.
Vader has a mask, and in that scene you're like, wait a second,
this guy,
hang on,
this menacing villain has feelings.
He killed like dozens of people in the last movie. He's probably killed dozens of people since then.
Yeah.
And what?
Why am I feeling bad?
Why am I feeling for this guy? At the very, very last shot when Luke's taken away by the guards and it's just Vader in the hallway by himself.
Yeah.
And he just, like, looks down. And you're like, you've never seen Vader alone like this before.
He look, and, like, you briefly see it in Empire Strikes Back when he's calling out to Luke and Luke resists and then they leave.
There.
And, like, he looks out the window. He's about to turn around and he takes one final glance back and then turned around to keep walking.
Right.
But
even there, it's not really like my son.
Yeah.
It's my mission. And it's like, okay, I gotta figure something else out for that.
Never yeah.
Really, I'll come back to this.
Whereas this is like almost you see him not exactly defeated, but like this is a guy who's been beaten.
It's all of
basically.
A sudden he's just like, this conflict got way more intense just now
for yeah.
him. And the conflict of the dark side or my son.
Yeah.
And because those are the options. Is me and my son are part of the dark side or my son dies or I die. You know, those are your options. It's I think very well done.
And then
how it does it.
Yeah. And I love the, and again, it also has a lot of great lines. One of them being, first Vader says to Luke, Obi-Wan once thought as you did that he could be turned and that he could be changed and stuff. And then, just kind of says quietly, just, it is too late for me, son.
Yeah.
And it's and like, yeah, he's called him son before and they call each other father, but like,
they don't call each other father.
I mean, you know what I mean? Luke is called Vader father. And, but like, this is the first time where it almost sounds more like he actually is his father who raised him now talking to his son.
Right.
Yeah. And then it just has a great moment of him grabbing the Emperor and redeeming himself.
But before then, the whole duel between the two of them, the Luke making the decision of, I'm going to kill the Emperor.
Yeah.
I have to kill the Emperor. That's the way I can win.
Mm-hmm.
And Vader stopping him, and this beautiful moment, it's not even like drawn attention to it, but you're like, is Vader protecting the Emperor or protecting Luke by blocking his blade?
Yeah.
Where the shot of just the blades crossing over the Emperor and him laughing. Because he knows, like, kind of no matter what...
He gets...
No matter what. And that's the thing. Again, I think that's why this movie's done well.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, there's no easy choice. And every choice will have significant repercussions.
Yeah.
Of, you can kill Vader right now, but you still have the Emperor to deal with. You can kill the Emperor right now, but you're still doing it out of vengeance. Yeah. I think I that whole duel, the music is so different than anything I heard before. The cinematography, the choreography is it's rough and it's on Cloud City and Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
It's rough and aggressive and Luke doesn't really know what he's doing and Vader is so in control.
Yeah.
And so, just playing with him. And then in Return of the Jedi, he's actually gotten better and he actually has like coordinated techniques and strategies and Vader, he's catching Vader off guard and Vader has to struggle to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And then
there's the moment where Luke gives into his anger for a moment and starts swinging randomly and overthrows him and chops off his hand and that sad music that's playing. And it's like, he's swinging at the bad guy. So why is sad music playing?
Right. But you're feeling sad for both of them.
Yeah.
And this is the point where you're like, you're both in the wrong at this point.
Because,
but not even there. I mean, that's the thing too, that that's like what you just said about A New Hope. Like, it's a classic hero villain, good guy, bad guy. Yeah. All these classic archetypes, and now Return of the Jedi, three movies later, all of a sudden you're like, obviously Vader should lose. Obviously evil needs to be defeated. But how exactly? By what ends does it happen?
It's not just going to be shoot an ion torpedo into the Death Star thing.
That's part of it.
Which is why I think it's interesting that, like, in the first movie, obviously, it just focuses on the trench run of the X-Wings over the Death Star.
Right.
And then in Return of the Jedi, yes, it still focuses on the Death Star, but the main attention is either on Endor or inside.
Right. The central conflict of the trilogy is Luke and Darth Vader.
Yeah.
That's the central conflict of the entire trilogy, so that makes sense for that to be the main focus for us to understand. We can blow up Death Stars all day long, but Darth Vader is still the ultimate villain of the story, and he's the one that ultimately needs to be defeated or redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's both. Vader is defeated, and Anakin Skywalker is redeemed.
Yeah.
And I think that's done so well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very well done.
Yeah.
That's Return of the Jedi. So then, what is it, like 30 years later it takes place?
I think so, roughly.
Is The Force Awakens, which I think set up a lot of things brilliantly.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think the low-resolution concepts that were set up of the Jedi have shrunk back into legend.
Yeah.
No one knows. You know, they had fallen into legend 20 years after the Order itself had fallen. Mm-hmm. People within their lifetimes knew about the Jedi Order and still chose not to believe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And now 30 years after that, it's even further.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool concept. And now we're dealing with that. But also, like you said, there's a lot of, this is introduced and that's introduced. And you go like, well, hang on, how did that happen? It's being introduced right now.
Yeah.
And there's not really an explanation for it.
We need an entire trilogy to explain why the Empire rose to power.
Right.
But then this new Empire
is
just snapped into existence within one movie.
In just about as much time as takes, or the time between Force Awakens and Return of the Jedi is about a little bit longer than the time between A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of the opposite. Though the overarching trilogy is, my opinion is the opposite than the prequels. The things I think I really like, that I think are done really well, are the very high resolution moments. Are these specific scenes between these characters, furthering these relationships, establishing these characters, giving them motivation. The things I don't like are the low resolution things, because there's no overarching plot for the new trilogy. There's no, like, this is the movie starts and this is the goal for the next three movies are these things.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, it's not like A New Hope starts and you know the mission of Luke Skywalker is to redeem his father.
Yeah.
Because you don't even know he's his father until the second one, and then the third one he decides, right?
Yeah.
So, but the central, Luke is a central hero and Vader is a central villain.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it makes sense for them to be the central conflict within the story, and therefore the central quest, the central goal. Even in the prequels, you don't know Palpatine is Sidious, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do because you're smart.
Yeah.
They aren't very subtle about it.
Yeah.
But even there, it's Anakin versus the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the central conflict.
Yeah.
And the dark side is personified by Sidious and Palpatine and Count Dooku and just the Separatists in general.
Mm-hmm.
But the sequel trilogy, I think, like, it's Rey versus Kylo Ren?
Yeah.
But even there, it's like, you don't know what the intentions are for either of them. They flip-flop. Within the same movie, they're flip-flopping, and I don't like it.
And also, like, even with Luke, where it's not even just you don't know, you don't know right away that he's going to redeem Vader, but you know, you essentially are given all the tools to lead you to believe why Luke would do that. You know he's very loyal to his family. You know he's a little bit, he tends to act more on his emotions sometimes and forgets to be a little bit more logical.
Right.
You know, and then in Empire Strikes Back, it just confirms he's willing to quit his training with potentially the only living Jedi left just to potentially save his friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, but with Rey, it's like we get she's a scavenger. We get all these things about her life of, like, maybe this can explain her skill, but we're not really given much as to who she is as a person. And then, like, even Finn is kind of given a little bit more character. At the very least, even if it is as shallow as...
throughout all three, or...
In The Force Awakens, when they're setting up the characters.
Right. I think in Force Awakens, all three, who I think should be the three main characters, you know...
Mm-hmm.
Rey, Finn, and Poe,
yeah,
all three are set up well. Mm-hmm. And I think I was on the path to really liking all three of them. Mm-hmm. I wished Poe were a little bit more involved. And as the movies went on, I think Poe, in my opinion, was the best part.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I thought Oscar Isaac had good, was charismatic and was funny and led cool action sequences.
Uh-huh. He didn't deserve that.
He didn't deserve that. Or he did, anyway. Yeah, Last Jedi comes in, and we'll get into this. Mm-hmm. Last Jedi, in a way, is a better movie than either of the other two in the sequel trilogy.
I think I see what you mean, yeah.
But it is so contrary to The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, you know, people were saying, you know, it's Force Awakens is too similar to Star Wars. Last Jedi was, you know, not like Star Wars at all.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like Star Wars or not like Star Wars. I think parts of the Bad Batch are not like Star Wars we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Bad Batch. I think the Bad Batch is an excellent show.
Yeah.
I think parts of the prequels are exactly like Star Wars.
Yeah.
And they fall flat.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's about being like Star Wars and not being like Star Wars. I think it's being consistent with making your characters and conflicts be consistent with the characters and conflicts of the established universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just as important, focusing on telling a good story and creating characters that are worth paying attention to and stakes that you're invested in.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think The Force Awakens is, it's not, you can argue, obviously, that it's a good film, but I think overall, it's not meant to be a good film. It's meant to be a good setup. A good...
Right.
Because basically what it's doing is just setting up, okay, here's the First Order. Here's Kylo Ren. Here are these characters. Here are the ones you're going to care about.
I think
about.
It does all that really well.
Yeah. And then The Last Jedi was meant... And I think it makes sense why The Last Jedi would be a good movie. It's just it was supposed to be a good movie that went off of Force Awakens.
Correct.
Instead of just being this is a movie that takes place after Force Awakens.
Right.
That's what it felt like.
And I think A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi are very different from each other in certain ways.
Yeah. And that's kind of their strength.
But it's also established that there are like years passed in between them.
Yeah.
As opposed to Last Jedi seems to be like
literally
pretty much after.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much right
it's
after
it's like
Force
they destroy
Awakens.
Starkiller Base. They go to the Resistance Base, and then Rey leaves, and it's like just after that, then suddenly... Okay,
oh, really?
After? And then pack your things and go. Well, I mean, considering they have the Flash, Finn asks Poe, where's Rey? And we cut right back to where Force Awakens left off. And so, and it doesn't really seem like there was much of a time gap once Rey left.
So... In Last Jedi, they keep bringing up there's 18 hours left of fuel.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of the dumbest conflicts, the dumbest ways to raise suspense in a Star Wars movie ever.
That's like a car having a flat tire.
Well, not even. Like, that makes sense because cars get flat tires. It's like nowhere in the previous 7 movies has anyone talked about fuel levels.
Yeah.
The Millennium Falcon is predictably, you know...
It falls short.
And most of the time it's played for laughs. It's not supposed... And Empire, it is continually like, okay, ready to go? It's not working. Never mind. We're going to run back and try and fix it, right?
It raises the stakes. But it's not the conflict
of
the film.
It's not the central conflict of the movie. Yeah. It's this thing with Han and Leia over here trying to escape the Empire that I think is done brilliantly. Anyway, that's a side thing.
Yeah.
But... Last Jedi, almost all of it takes place over the course of about a day, right? Because they presume, you know, it starts with them attacking the Dreadnought. That happens a little while later.
Yeah.
They come in, and now it's 18 hours after that. They destroy the main ship and then land on...
Crate.
Yeah. So it takes place over the course of, like, one day. So Rey was with Luke for, like, one day?
And there they already established that... Okay, he needs to train him. No, the Jedi Order needs to end. Okay, can you train me a little bit? Yes, I'll train you a little bit. Okay, also, by the way, Kylo and her start talking, and he says, hey, there's been some things going on between me and Luke, and I don't like him. Want to find out why? Hey, why does Kylo not like you? Because I tried to kill him in his sleep. Okay, I need to go off and run to save the people on Crate. Okay, well, you think I'm just going to go in and save them? Okay, I'm going to come in and save you. Okay, Rey already knows how to lift the rocks. And all right, all that took place in the course of a day.
Yeah. Which, in a way, Luke was only with Yoda for probably, you know... Again, time passes weird in space,
yeah.
Right? But, you know, It could have been a week or something. We never know entirely because, I don't know.
Yeah.
Timelines are, I don't know. They're just, it's not really worth looking into.
Timeline is not their strong suit, either J.J. Right. Abrams or Rian Johnson. Right. Maybe J.J. Abrams, but definitely not Rian Johnson.
Anyway, so, yeah, I think the main ways that The Last Jedi falls short is it's not furthering anything.
Yeah.
It's cool, again, cool concepts.
Yeah.
It's introducing new things that are cool, that are mm-hmm. fun, but not building off at all on any of the things set up in the previous movie, which is exactly why Empire Strikes Back, I think, is such a great sequel.
Yeah.
Is because it builds off entirely
it doesn't just,
of what you was given, and also doesn't repeat anything.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, as opposed to this, doesn't repeat anything, and doesn't build off of anything. So it's missing one yeah. of the key components to make a good sequel.
It doesn't, Empire Strikes Back doesn't just show you, oh, look, Vader's ship is bigger than all the other ones.
Right.
That's pretty cool, right? All right, now let's go back to watching Luke Skywalker. He is going through the Tatooine again,
yeah.
and they are wondering what to do now.
Yeah.
We went from desert planet from the first movie to now we're on a freezing cold planet, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, it builds off of it.
Hey, real quick, how come all the planets are almost entirely just one environment?
I've always wondered that.
Like, all of Dagobah is a swamp. All of Tatooine is
all
a
of
desert.
Kamino
all
is
of
raining.
Kamino is an ocean.
Yeah,
it's raining
also,
most of the time.
If it's raining most of the time, at what point, won't it just eventually reach up into the atmosphere and, like, no more? Will there just be water just, like, will
Does
be
the planet
around?
Just grow? Where is the rain coming from?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the water cycle's the same there. Like,
No, it can't be.
And then you wonder, like, okay, so are poles not a thing?
Yeah.
In this galaxy? Like, is the temperature the same?
Yeah.
Spot to spot?
It's very strange. Because, like, even on Hoth, yeah, it's snowing for the first few chunks, but that snow clears away. The storm clears
right.
away, and it just has
So you wonder,
winter.
Does it ever melt? Because that's, like, how our planet works.
Yeah.
It's like, it melts, and it evaporates, and it is absorbed by the Earth, and then, humidifies.
Yeah.
Whereas reabsorbed by the clouds, comes down again in rain or snow. That's how the water cycle works. Did you know about this, Chuck?
I do know about this.
Yeah, you're a smart kid, I think.
No, but also, yeah, because the whole planet can't be snow, because if the whole planet is snow,
then there's nowhere for the snow
then how
to come
is the,
from anymore.
Yeah, how is the Earth rotating? Is it just, like, constantly just swirling around in all directions? There are a lot of...
Oh, because of...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like,
because
Jupiter
one side would be
is,
close.
Like, significantly colder than here, right?
Yeah, but it... I guess it doesn't have seasons, but that's also because it's a gas giant, and so... It's like its actual surface part is actually kind of, well, not small because
well,
it's space.
I mean, Mars is like pretty much the same ecosystem, right?
That's true, but it's also not one we can live in. And like, we don't know if life can survive on that, whereas on those planets, it's made clear that life can survive.
But they have like an atmosphere.
Yeah.
So with an atmosphere, do you inherently have different environments depending on its location?
No, it's not granted, but like, I would imagine that with an atmosphere, that also means you're going to have, like, pressure differences, clouds, and with clouds means this part's going to be rainy, but this part isn't, this part's going to be growing life, this part isn't, and then with that comes tectonic plates and whatnot. Also, that's another thing, do they not have tectonic plates? Because...
I don't know.
That's something they would probably... Because if they did, then that, I'm pretty sure that also helps change the environment and stuff due to earthquakes and water changes and stuff. Also, how is an entire planet made up of salt?
I don't know.
Crate.
I don't want to talk about crate anymore. What was I saying before that? I was talking about Last Jedi's biggest... Well, yeah. It just doesn't build off
yeah.
well enough.
Yeah.
And then, this is where we're really going to get into it. Rise of Skywalker comes along and tries to go in every single direction possible.
Yeah.
Popsible.
I heard someone brought up an example of, or made a point. It's like the sequel trilogy purposely leaves open ends to have the next person take it however they want.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Rey and Finn, it could go somewhere, but it also might not, but it could. Mm-hmm. So the people who support them, that can go together. Oh, but there might be people who support more Rey and Kylo. Okay, we'll have Kylo and Rey
yeah.
potentially come together. And it's like, no, nothing is defined. No,
nothing
there
is actually like...
Rey and Finn don't have a kiss. Rey and Kylo have a kiss, sure, but...
Kinda.
But
it's the weirdest thing ever.
But he dies instantly. And also, apparently, J.J. Abrams said it was more like a platonic kiss, like a strong friendship.
You know how friends kiss. You know how that just happens.
Is it just like you enter the Star Wars saga now and you have to not know how people act?
Yeah.
Like, maybe, I don't know. That's just the law.
It's just...
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. It's just like, it was set up so well in Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. Last Jedi came in and was like, nope, not doing any of that. We're going to do all these things. Again, those things that they did had the potential to be really cool. Yeah. I think some of it was executed very well.
Yeah.
But then that also, then Rise of Skywalker comes in and totally falls flat. Because it's just like, you're doing 1,000 different things. You're trying to be 3.5 movies in one movie. Mm-hmm. And we don't have time for all this.
Yeah.
We don't have time for all this,
It's trying
guys.
So desperately to clean up every mess and tie every little knot and give everything a nice little bow. And this was something I talked to Mom a little bit about after we saw a certain film, which I won't name on chance that some people like. But something that we had... another thing that we had a problem with was the fact that it tried to clean up every little loose end. It tried to fix every little thing.
This is Rise of Skywalker or this movie that you're...
The movie we're talking about.
Okay, cool.
It tried to fix every little thing and make everything all nice and stuff, which sounds on paper like, yeah, that's how a story should be and stuff. Right. But on the other hand, you should be okay letting some loose ends be tied.
Right.
Like Star Wars, if the first one, 1977, if... That one came out and never had any of the sequels, we wouldn't know what happened to Vader. We just know he's wandering off in space.
Right.
What happened to him? We can just assume, I don't know, maybe he got lost somewhere,
right.
Maybe he died.
Maybe he died, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know, and we don't need to know. Because
but I think people
right
would
now,
still, had there been absolutely no sequels, I think people would still today go back to that movie and go, man, that's a great movie. Oh yeah, Star Wars?
Yeah.
That's a really good movie. It's a solidly entertaining film.
Yeah, for sure. And like, that's the thing that I think Rise of Skywalker was trying to do, that I think a lot of modern-day Hollywood tries to do, is try and tie up every loose end when it's like, you can... Don't focus... How to describe it? So, Star Wars, when it released, it had so many different things. Aliens, destination points, technology, all these things.
Right.
That are like, this is cool. This floating ball that shoots Luke, that's pretty cool. You might wonder where that thing came from, what its history is. Well... It's not to say that isn't important. It's just that's not relevant
that's
to the story.
That's not the point of the story.
The story isn't going to revolve around this. So we're going to... That's just a thing. If you want to learn more about, you can, whatever, read this comic, go on the Wikipedia or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just showing you, like, these are all the big parts of the universe. These are the parts we're going to focus on.
Right.
It's like the Rise of Skywalker was like, well, we already showed all of this, so we have to focus on all of this. Instead of being like, no, you can show a giant crowd. We don't have to know every person in the crowd.
We don't need a biopic about each one.
Yeah. If you want to, just put that on the side.
Right.
But we're watching the Rise of Skywalker because we want to watch these characters.
That's true. Everything that's introduced, they're like, we have to tie this up somehow. You have to, at the last scene, be like, remember the thing she said at the beginning that's relevant still?
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think so.
We
feel like you're forcing it.
We showed the medal way back in 1977 and saw that it wasn't given to Chewie, so now it has to be given to Chewie to tie up that loose end.
There were so many things in this movie where I'm like, what gave you the right to go back and touch the original trilogy?
I know.
What gave you the right to try and to fix problems in this movie? Like, that's the thing. I watched this really great video talking about why the sequel trilogy is worse than the prequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things is, prequel trilogy came out. After that, they made Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
They doubled down. They said, hey, no, it's flawed. We're going to try and fix those flaws. We're
going
to try and flesh out this character's better in a different setting.
Yeah.
With new rules and just different time. You know, it doesn't have to all fit within three movies.
Yeah.
This is 7 seasons. You know, they didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
But it's 7 seasons worth of 20-minute episodes where we're going to follow these characters over here, and we're going to jump over and follow these characters over here. And they said, we're just going to do that. And it worked really, really well.
Yeah.
The sequel trilogy came in and said, we're going to do this. Now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do this. We're going to do this. Now we're not. And that's what they were doing for 3 movies.
Yeah.
Was just arguing with each other. It was 2 millionaires arguing with each other over where the story should go.
Yeah.
With absolutely no regard to how it actually looks as an overarching story and how the audience would feel about any of
it. It's almost like they sat Rian Johnson and J.J. Abrams in the same room and said, all right, so how are we going to make the sequel trilogy? And they were debating it, but secretly they were just recording it and we're like, okay, so that's the plot.
It. Yeah.
Like, instead of being like, okay, no, we actually, and then by the time they were like, okay, we came to an actual conclusion, they're like, no, the trilogy already was made. Wait, what?
Yeah. I really wish there was a third director for Rise of Skywalker. I think it would have been better if it were J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson, and someone else entirely. Because I think the fact that J.J. Abrams did two, his tone is so specific.
It is.
And Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker have so much in common in the tone and the pacing and stuff that Last Jedi is absolutely so different from. It does not work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. I think the trilogies are very consistent, or the prequels are very consistent with each other. I think the original three are consistent in a way, but also very three very different tones from each other because they're three different writers and directors for each one.
Like I said, you know, when the director of Empire Strikes Back came along, he didn't say, oh, you see this mask Darth Vader has? I don't like that. We're going to give him something different. Or he didn't say, oh, I don't like that. I'm going to get rid of it and change it to my own story. It's more like I see what you're going for. I'm going to see if I can expand this. I'm going to see if I can work upon this.
And the things that were changed were like Mark Hamill got in a car accident, so his face looked a little different.
Yeah, so we're going to have to explain that.
Right. The fact that in A New Hope, Darth Vader's like side robe things went over his like chest plate, and then Empire was underneath, which gave him more defined like shoulders.
Yeah,
the things that were changed were not like let's make it big, giant. It could have just been. What about in Last Jedi? Kylo Ren just happened to not wear a helmet as much. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to include this giant epic scene where he like smashed the helmet and renounced it.
Yeah,
you know, it's dumb. It's dumb. It's very very dumb. Okay, yeah, let's move on from that because we're there. Rise of Skywalker, I think, is not just one of the weakest movies, one of the weakest Star Wars movies I've seen. I think it's one of the weakest movies I've ever seen. I think it's very poorly paced. I think it's I don't care about any of the characters. Things happen, and if it were one moment in this movie, which on the whole was pretty good. If one moment in Rise of Skywalker that I really hated was in The Force Awakens, it would have been like, huh, that was a really weird moment that happened. I don't really understand why that happened. What was the motivation behind it? Did it make sense?
Yeah.
But on the whole, this was a pretty good movie. But it got to a point in Rise of Skywalker, like 30 minutes in, where it was moment after moment after moment after moment happened, but it got to a point where I was like, fine.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Again, as I said, it was brilliant to wait till the last movie to have Palpatine return. Because by that point, we're all just like, oh, Palpatine's returned?
Sure.
Why not? Like, why not throw all those
let's
things
Let's just do
in?
It. Can let's Qui-Gon just, come back? Let's have Qui-Gon be alive.
What about Mace Windu? Where's that guy at?
Yeah. Let's just, it really, it's just so like.
Yeah.
It's like, you know those Greatest Hits album? The Beatles' Greatest Hits or whatever? It's like that, but you give it to like a really bad cover band. It's like Star Wars Greatest Hits, brought to you by people who are not as good as the original Star Wars
brought
people.
Brought to you by Star Trek fans.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Well, like with Pops, where it's, or I guess ice cream is a better example, where like you can have all these favorites and stuff, but vanilla, come on. It's good. It's a classic, and it started all these other ones.
People will argue with you.
Yeah, I know. I know there are a lot of people who don't like vanilla, which, I mean, those people are weird.
Yeah, they are.
What, do you...
I don't know what to tell you, Chuck. Sorry.
I think you do.
All right, folks. Chuck, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate the whole you being my brother thing.
Oh, thanks, Chuck.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't really have much of a say in this, but I'm happy to fulfill the role.
I'm glad that we're able to enjoy Star Wars, and it's not just like I like Star Wars and you don't, or you think it's meh, or you like Star Wars and I think it's meh.
Yeah,
it's like we both enjoy it probably to the same level,
right.
and talk about it and stuff
when,
like that.
When I'm home in Nashville and Chuck's home in Rochester, the way we normally hang out is we FaceTime each other and play Battlefront and talk about Star Wars. That's the majority of how we hang out. And then when I'm home this week, we spent a good chunk this morning playing Battlefront and the new Lego Star Wars game. So it's a pretty significant portion of our relationship.
Yeah.
And watching The Bad Batch last summer with you and Eamon was one of the funner experiences in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, hopefully we have more Star Wars memories to make. But let's not be like too nerdy about it.
Oh,
let's still be a little pretentious.
Okay.
And talk, you know, use big words like
apotheosis
and cathartic and all that.
Oh, 100%.
Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode of Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. If you enjoyed it, consider heading over to patreon.com/Opal Entertainment to hear Taliesin and I rank all 9 movies in order of appreciation. And we'll see you next week for a brand new episode of
Between Takes.